Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, March 4th, 2016. With me today, I have Adam Christensen from the MacCast. How are you, Adam?
Hey, good.
It's great to have you. Yeah. Yeah. And John Martellaro. Good to have you, too.
I'm fully charged, battery level 100%.
Excellent. Excellent. And unlike many people's iPhones, your charge will last all day long.
Yes, it will.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of iPhones, I figured that would be a great place to start today, and specifically the iPhone SE. So we have a few days of sales now. The iPhone started showing up last Friday, and we had some word from China a few days earlier that they had sold about 3.5 million pre-orders. Yeah. And now we have some analysts saying that maybe iPhone SE sales aren't that great. And I was curious, yeah. What do you guys think?
It's Ming-Chi Kuo who came out with some numbers either over the weekend or early today, looking at total iPhone sales for 2016. And he's predicting 190 to 210 million units, which would still be below the 232 that they sold in Apple sold in 2015. So he's kind of implying that we're not going to get over peak iPhone this year, which a lot of analysts are looking at as sort of the thing that they want to see Apple do. So Apple may sell less iPhones total in 2016 than 2015, and some had believed that the SE might counteract that effect. So personally, I don't see that as the thing. I was saying this earlier. I don't think that's the thing that Apple was looking for with the SE. I think SE is a much slower roller. It's not a phone targeted at early adopters. It's going to take a while to ramp up. No one's going to be rushing in to pay early termination fees on their contract for their 5C or whatever 5S that they've held on to upgrade. So. I think it's going to happen slowly over time, but I don't even think Apple was looking at it as a way of overcoming this whole peak iPhone thing. I think Apple recognizes the iPhone is a very mature product, and consumers have just moved on to a slower, most consumers have, who aren't us, early adopters have moved on to a longer upgrade cycle. I mean, the phones are good enough that you don't need to replace your 5S right away. You're going to do it on maybe a 2-year cycle, maybe even a 3-year cycle now. And that may be a problem for Apple, but I don't really think they're unaware of it.
Kind of on along those lines, Adam, I see the latest iPhone as a sort of a spiky phenomena for those geeks out there, like a direct Delta function. Everybody's got to have it, and they pre-order it, and they got to have it right now, and then the sales kind of taper off. If you plotted the SE sales over throughout the year, I bet it would be more constant as people's income allowed, and as people made the gradual decision to upgrade, and as people thought, I don't need an iPhone 7 in the fall, so maybe it's time for me to replace my phone at this time. So it's going to be kind of evened out over the year, and I think it's going to accumulate as opposed to being a spiky kind of thing that people are expecting, as you said.
Right. I mean, it's funny, too, that people are throwing out numbers, because another number that dropped was Localytics dropped that, over the first weekend of sales, SE only grabbed 0.1% of the total iPhone market. But that's one weekend worth of sales. I don't know that we can, throw numbers out like that and you go, the iPhone 4 still has 2%. So it's only a very small percentage of, iPhone 4s that are out there. Well, come on. What's it going to do in the first weekend? You got to give it, again, this is a phone that's going to take some time to generate some sales, because, again, I don't think people were, it wasn't designed to get people to rush into an Apple store and buy a new phone. It's exactly. For the Android people that are coming in going, I want to switch over. What do you have that's maybe a little more affordable, because I just want to try it out. I haven't done an iPhone before. And now they have a really rock solid model that internally and from a technology standpoint is up to snuff with the higher end phones, but at a more approachable price point. It's the phone that, you know, my mom is going to get when she goes in, but she's not going to rush in day one and go, oh, I need a new iPhone.
Yeah, so, I can't imagine my parents standing in line for an iPhone ever.
I think that's a great point you made about Android switchers finally coming around to the idea of, well, what have you got? What have you got that's less expensive? And that's going to be a year-round thing, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, here's a phone. I think, you know, it starts at, what, $17 a month or something, Apple said, on their plan now. So it's very approachable. It's a very affordable for a walk-in customer or somebody who's just browsing, you know. And I think when they're able to sort of roll off the specs on top of that, yeah, that will entice people to actually maybe make the leap. But again, it's not one of these day one things. So I just was finding interesting that a lot of the analysis was sort of trying to spin it like, well, the SE is a flop. And my point is, I think it's really too early to tell that it's a flop. Is it ever going to sell, you know, the number of units as a 6S or a 6S Plus? It's not even going to be close. It's going to be, you know, a few percent, I think. But again, I think Apple was looking at this, and I think the timing with it being sort of a mid-cycle rollout was all about just sort of leveling off the drop-off between phone cycles. So, you know, us geeks, we're all waiting on the 7, right?
Right.
But there's all these other people in the middle where, hey, Apple can maybe sell a few more phones, add a few more phones to the bottom line. But as far as, you know, getting back to peak iPhone, I think that day has gone. I don't see Apple getting back to those numbers. And I don't think that they're, you know, I don't believe that they're not aware of that. And I don't believe that Apple probably internally sees that as a problem. They're still selling a lot of phones and, more importantly, making a lot of profit. And my guess is that the profit margins on each iPhone SE sale are nice and healthy. So, you know, I just don't see it as a concern. So it's just funny to see how the media wants to immediately take this phone down, you know, as being a failure. But we don't know what Apple's measure of success for this device is. My guess is that by Apple's measure of success, this is probably going to fill in exactly what they were looking for. But that's just my own sort of speculation.
I think you're right, Adam. I think you exactly nailed it.
I think so, too. And I think that the lack of lines at stores is not an issue. To me, this looks like a device that was designed to be sold outside the echo chamber. And for people that are used to seeing iPhone sales through the echo chamber or from within the echo chamber, they expect to see lines for everything. And if that doesn't happen, then that to them translates to a failure. Or if the device does not interest them specifically, then it's a flop. And I have a feeling we're seeing that.
Yeah, I'll give you where I would want to see and the number I would want to look at over time is how does the iPhone SE do compared to the iPhone 5C? Because a lot of people wanted to say the 5C was a flop too. But again, I don't think Apple felt it was a flop. And I don't, from my perspective, I don't think it was a flop either. And looking at the Localytics numbers, you know, they're saying 5C represents about 5% of the market. And so, you know, that if the SE gets up to that number, then I think, you know, that's more indicative of whether it's a success or failure. You know, how does it do compared to the 5C? And I wouldn't be surprised. I would be surprised if it doesn't do better than the 5C did. And I think Apple considers the 5C really filled a part of their product lineup for iPhone that was important. And I think that was probably, I would imagine internally, that's right around where they thought it would sell. I think they were actually surprised with 5C, to be honest. And I seem to remember them making comments at certain calls that it was doing better than they had expected. So,
sure, yeah. And I'm with you, Adam. I think you've totally nailed it.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, again, only time is going to tell. But, I mean, for sure, it's way too early to call iPhone SE, you know, a flop or lackluster or all the other, you know, sort of link baiting headlines people are going to want to throw at it over the next couple of weeks.
Right. Yep. Okay. Well, we have more to talk about. And actually, John, this relates totally to you. You were paying close attention to what was happening with the Tesla Model 3 over the weekend.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Tesla. It turns out that in the mall I go to, there's a Tesla dealership right across from the Apple store.
Well, how appropriate.
Yes, couldn't be in a better place. And I'm on their mailing list, and I get invitations. I haven't yet had time to take them up on a test drive, but boy, that would be fun. And I've been waiting for this Tesla Model 3 for a long time because I have been following another car that's very similar, called the Chevy Bolt, which is supposed to go into production later this year or for sale. It's probably in production close and for sale in August, as I recall. This is Chevy Bolt with a B as in boy, not V as in Victor. And it's a pure electric car. It's small. It's got a similar range, and it comes in at about a similar price, depending on the options on the Tesla. And so one of the observations I made is that even though the Tesla Model 3 has gotten a lot of press, it isn't going to be shipping until 2017, maybe later. And it's awfully remarkable that 232,000 people, many of whom stood in line. Think about that, standing in line for a car.
Pre-ordering
you're
a car.
You're in that line, right?
It's a pre-order. Yeah, not like cashback, rebates. Oh, please, we beg you to buy our car. Come on in. Please, please, please buy us a car. We'll pay you to buy our car. You know, this is the first car I have ever seen where people stood in line to put money down to get a position in line. And the lines were huge. Now, I wonder how many of those people realize they're not going to get their car if they finalize the purchase until later next year. And so that brings up an interesting question about, you know, maybe people will be impatient and spring for a Chevy Bolt this year. But the Tesla's so cool and the electronics are so cool. But the Bolt's pretty neat, too. And so we've got two really good competitors here. Pure Electrics, $35,000 to $40,000, 200-plus mile range. And another thing it makes me think about is that this is sort of an inflection point in the electric car industry. When you've got that many people signing up for a car, almost sight unseen, suddenly you realize that there's a lot of pent-up demand for pure electric cars. And, of course, the industry's got still got some problems to deal with in terms of things like range anxiety and charging stations. But the Teslas, remember, have a system where you input where you want to go. You tell it the GPS coordinates or the destination that you want to go to, and it says, well, I can get you there. I can get you there on no refill, or I can get you there if you stop at these charging stations on the way, or I can't get you there, so you better not try that. So it's a different way to drive. It's a different thing to get used to. And so this combination of worrying about getting stranded, the change in having to, except for a local drive to the grocery store, you know, for longer drives, having to input your destination and follow the computer and modifying your garage a junction box, you know, to give you a charging station. It's kind of a little bit of a resistance, but I think the resistance is breaking down, and Tesla has been so good at marketing. They've had these videos, you know, we've seen demos of autopilot stopping a car at night when there's almost a collision in the rain. We've seen demonstrations of ludicrous mode of 0 to 60 in 3 seconds and 0 to 150 on the Autobahn in what, 15 or 18 seconds. And so the atmosphere around this car is so exciting, and the technology and the computerization and the green aspect of the car and the high techness of it. So then that brings up the question now, all of a sudden, is Apple sweating? Are the other car companies sweating a little bit? I think a lot of companies that were being aggressive and thoughtful and had a plan last week were greatly alarmed by 232,000 down payments. That's $232 million suddenly in Tesla's pocket. They're going to need it to build a big factory in Nevada. But suddenly the economies of scale are coming into play. If you can get a lot of people to buy a car for $35,000 or $40,000 instead of a few people to pay $60,000 or $80,000 or more, you can get into economies of scale of the battery, and then you can reduce the price of the battery. And so you get this feedback mechanism where more people buy the car, the cost of the batteries goes down, you get more success, you sell more cars. And this is going to ramp up over the next few years. And so I wrote an article on Friday, how can Apple possibly compete with the Tesla Model 3? Apple better have something very competitive out of the box in 2019 at the earliest. And so suddenly it seems to me it changes the competitive posture of Tesla versus Apple.
Well, you mentioned this is the first time you've seen people line up to buy a car. And I agree.
Maybe it's happened. I haven't seen it before, but maybe it's happened.
Yeah, I haven't seen
maybe
that happen.
DeLorean.
I don't think so. I don't think so. No.
It might happen with the new one.
Right. Yeah, it could happen.
They're bringing the DeLorean back in limited release, I think.
So. Yes. Did we do a cool spot on that? I think I saved it, but I don't remember if I got it published.
I don't recall either. Yeah. But yeah, I suppose we could have a line for the limited edition DeLorean. My assumption is we'll have a line for the Apple car, assuming you can walk into a store and actually, order an Apple car in an Apple store.
Well, that's a whole other thing, right?
In my mind, the big trade-off here is, does Apple benefit from the 3 years ahead of research and development to the point where they can do something radically better? Or does Apple suffer from the fact that Tesla by 2019 or 20 is going to be selling several hundred thousand electric cars a year and be too far ahead?
Right.
It's a trade-off there, and I don't know what's going to happen.
Sure. Well, run with it. I know where you're going.
Sorry, no, I was going to... I kind of got more back on what John was saying. You know, with GM entering the market, too, I don't think it's just Apple. I think, you know, car companies in Japan and other car companies in Europe and in the U.S. are looking at this thing and going, wow, you know... This is now is sort of the time. Yeah. So I think your point is well made, John, that, you know, like timing has become suddenly an issue for a lot of people where I think they thought they had more time than they
right.
would. And it's going to be interesting to see how Apple reacts. I mean, it could be entirely that Apple just realizes, all right, this is a game we're not going to be able to get into. I mean, at least they're at the point where it's been so secretive that they could bail out now if they really wanted to and nobody would really notice. You know, they could just say, look, we didn't make that race. And I don't know that they're going to do that. But it is interesting. I mean, are they going to what play are they going to make if they do come to market in 2019? Are they going to stick with, you know, lower volume sales and try to play the high end where Tesla's really got
that's a good
big
point.
Stronghold? But Tesla has a big stronghold in that end of the market.
Remember we heard prices like $50,000 for the Apple car bandied around. You know, Apple would be selling a premium car. And all of a sudden, Tesla is going another direction. We're going mass market, drive the prices down.
Right. It's going to be much harder to sell.
Sure.
At the higher price point.
But it's not like this would come as a surprise to Apple, because Tesla made it clear long ago that their plan was to start high and work down in the price range.
Right.
So no surprise there. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens if Apple releases a car. Do people line up? And where will they line up? Because you can't just walk into an Apple store and buy a car.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's the whole dealership model problem that Tesla's been struggling with for years. You know, in most places, you have to have a physical dealership. That's why that little store exists, right, John?
Right.
In your area. Ultimately, Tesla and Apple and everybody, I think, would like the ability for someone just to go online, configure their car, order it, and arrange for a pickup.
I don't think it's a requirement in Colorado. I think that the Dealer Association in Colorado hasn't put up a squawk like they have in New Jersey and some other states. So maybe in Colorado it's different, but still, it's not a bad idea to have one right across from the Apple Store.
Well, but again, I think that's another front where there needs to be more lobbying, especially, and I think we'll see it coming from tech companies. You know, if Apple is going to get into this market, I think there's going to be a lot more push for the whole dealer system to change. so that you can do direct car sales and you don't
Sure. When you have a P85 or a 90 and you're spending $75,000 or $80,000, you get a very elite audience. But when you get 232,000 people in line, you know, and you're going to have many, many more buyers than that down the road, you broaden your spectrum of buyers so much that the expectation spectrum changes.
Yeah,
and they're not going to be comfortable.
I did hear a number on that pre-order thing that they, you know, it's typical with the pre-orders or reservations they've done in the past, about half of those will actually convert.
Right, I mentioned that in my article. Right. Yeah, 51% is what they mentioned.
All right, well, that's pretty good for something like that, I'm assuming.
Sure. But it's still going to put pressure on Tesla's production facility. And all of a sudden they've got, I don't think even Tesla expected that many pre-orders. And long lines. So now the company's got to take this $232 million and really scramble and deliver to all those, to all the 51% who's expected to actually take delivery.
I would imagine they have to be concerned about the Bolt, though, and also, you know, what other car company maybe has something in the pipeline. We haven't really heard anything, but I mean, is it possible some other car companies have something in the pipeline? And now that Tesla sort of tipped their hand, they can try and beat them to market and, again, take away some of those sales.
Well, two other competitors in my mind. One is the Nissan Leaf, which has a track record and a long history. And I expect Nissan to up their game, unless they want to play down market, you know, less expensive, less range.
Right.
I don't know where they'll go, but I think they'll be inspired. And 75-mile range is not going to cut it anymore.
No, everybody's going to have to up their range.
Yeah, and then the BMW i3 is a first-generation electric. They have an option for a small engine to give you extra range in case your battery goes dead. But the i3 is kind of a dorky, if I may say so, BMW. It's got skinny tires. It's rear-wheel drive only. Not so good for Colorado. And it's kind of dorky looking. But I think BMW is going to do better than the i3 down the road.
Yeah, I mean, Volkswagen has the e-Golf too, but again, that's an under 100-mile range right now, so they have to really step up their game. But, I mean, is that, I've often wondered how difficult, I mean, is that really that difficult? Because doesn't that just come down to batteries and electronics? Like, you know, I don't know. I don't know enough about the industry. Like, why do we have the range problem with lower-priced cars? Is it the cost of the batteries? Is it the technology is just so difficult to develop, and Tesla's really the only company that's cracked that? That's something I've never understood, because there seems to be this gulf in electric cars where you've got all these lower-end models that are sub, you know, right around 100 or sub-100-mile range, and then you have Tesla, you know, at the 200-plus side. And it's like, where are all the cars that are at 150, 175, 180?
My perception
that are affordable?
I could be wrong, Adam, but my perception is that Tesla has two advantages, and that is the software that extracts the performance from the batteries and the battery technology that they've developed.
But that they open sourced that, right? A few years back. So anybody can get that technology. Am I misunderstanding that as well?
I don't know. It could be price too. It could be the people want to spend $25,000 on a Nissan Leaf. That gets,
it might be
75 miles.
And
if it's a 5-mile trip one way to work, you know, you don't only have to charge your Leaf on weekends if it's 10 miles round trip.
Yeah, and maybe manufacturing is the thing. You know, Tesla has a huge battery manufacturing facility, and that's not easy to build out. So maybe that's why Tesla felt comfortable. It's like, well, you've got to build infrastructure to build enough batteries to put in these cars, and maybe just the other manufacturers can't make enough batteries to, you know, totally outfit their lines. I don't know. You know, and you've got the most interesting thing is, like, for example, the Fiat, they did the e-Fiat, and I remember that CEO coming out and saying, oh, yeah, we're losing money on every one of those cars. We really have no interest in developing those, and we're only putting them on the road because California has these laws that say we have to have a certain percentage if we want to continue to sell cars in California. So,
yeah.
You know, it could be that sort of thing, too, where a lot of manufacturers are just making electrics just so they have models, but they're not really interested in entering the market. But like you're pointing out, John, with the number of sales and interest in this Model 3, they may want to change their tune now, right? It's like, right. Oh, here's customers. Here, there is pent-up demand. I know I would love to have an electric, but the price is just way too high for the range that I would want at this point.
Yep, I'm with you. Yeah. Hey,
and
we're out of
Tesla
time.
Sells more of these cars, the pressure will come downward on other makers. Yeah.
Yep.
Yes. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yes. So, yep, we're out of time. We have to wrap up. John, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. I'm still fully charged.
Excellent. Excellent. And Adam, thank you for being here as well.
Hey, thanks for having me, as always.
Yep.
It's fun.
It's great to have both of you. Listeners, thank you for joining us. And we'll see everyone again tomorrow.